BBLs, overdosing on GLP-1s, bragging about your peptide stack and how it completely replaces exercise, and aesthetic pictures like mirror selfies or whatnot, even if they look super good with downlighting.
Welcome back to the Gillette Health Podcast. My name is James O'Hara. I'm a nurse practitioner. And today we're going to be talking about the importance of DEXA scans and how, if you've gotten one, you might be able to win $1,000 in free labs and a free subscription to Sage Bio's Visualizer. So stay tuned.
Things that we're trying to normalize. Having a good DEXA scan for metabolic health and bone density. Being able to have clean coronary arteries and carotids. And being free of risks of neurodegenerative disease. Things that are going out. BBLs. Overdosing on GLP-1s, bragging about your peptide stack and how it completely replaces exercise, and apparently even aesthetic pictures like mirror selfies or whatnot, even if they look super good with downlighting, then at the end of the day, like, who really cares if your health, fitness, or medicine influencer has great muscle bellies or insertions, et cetera? They should be bringing the receipts when it comes to actual health outcomes.
Yeah. So the details of the contest, like, first and foremost, are to win the maximum prize, you have to beat Dr. Gillette or Maddie Gillette in five categories. So T-score, which is bone density.
Yep.
Lean muscle, so how much lean mass is there in pounds.
Which is your fat-free mass minus your bone mass, basically.
Yeah. Visceral adipose tissue, bone mass, and body fat percentage. So a lower body fat percentage, more muscle mass, more bone mass, or having things basically pointing all the right directions. Mm-hmm. So before people get too excited, maybe we just start off with your bone mass, because I think that's probably the hardest single metric for someone to achieve. Like, if they were like, oh, I'm going to train for this, and like one of our physicians was, he was going to say, how long do I have to get this DEXA scan to you? He's like, I'm going to show up in 20 years and show you that I beat you.
So. Yeah, still might be hard. You probably have to start when you're a kid, which is what I did. I exercised a lot when I was a kid, and I ate a ton. My bone mass was, which is like dry bone, was 9.5 pounds, and my T-score was 4.6 standard deviations above the mean.
Yep. So you're in like the top, what, 10th of a percent of the population in terms of your bone density.
Yeah, basically Brian Shaw bone mass, like, nearing those bone mass numbers. Now, he's taller and bigger and a lot stronger than I am, but he also had a lot more visceral adipose and a lot higher body fat percentage. So the trick is to have a particularly high bone mass and concurrently a healthy, low body fat percentage. Frankly, one of the things that's helped me is, although I've been very lean and skinny, I have never gone through periods where I really restrict down on calories. And I've kind of been in this perpetual main gain phase.
Yeah, you never fell for the, like, six-pack shortcuts where you were starving yourself to, you know, get the quote-unquote six-pack. Mm-hmm. And you've always had sort of an active lifestyle, competed in sports, running, you know, like you said, basketball, soccer, all these things that are osteogenic, going to promote bone formation. And then, you know, even getting into, like, weightlifting, right? Mm-hmm. You've been lifting weights for probably 2 decades now, would you say?
Yeah.
Close to it?
Yeah, off and on. I started significantly, really my last year of college, first year of med school, I really got into it. But before that, I did a lot of what I'd consider like body weight exercises and sport specific exercise.
Right. And maybe we can keep these pinned on the screen while we're talking about. So T-score. Next, we have the amount of lean mass, 191 pounds.
Yeah. So 191 pounds of lean mass. And then you would add that to my bone mass, which is 9.5. So that would make around 201 pounds of fat-free mass. This is something that I built very slowly. I do have a very large frame. And I think everybody that I meet that knows me from the podcast, not in real life, says, wow, you're a lot taller and bigger than expected. And, you know, it's kind of like the illusion. That's why I'd be a terrible bodybuilder. I have horrible bodybuilding genetics. I really only have my ab insertions. Or have I have like four abs.
I really just tell our media guys to zoom out on you and zoom in on me.
Yeah, they don't actually do that, by the way. You have much better bodybuilding genetics and actually CrossFit genetics than I do. But one of the benefits of having, you know, being big boned, I guess, literally, is I've been able to build a lot of lean mass pretty easily.
Bones like an ostrich, as I like to say.
Yeah. By easily, I mean, I have never done a steroid cycle. You know, I talk about in the post how I started some low dose of like true replacement testosterone. I've never taken, what I consider super physiologic doses. And I have not had any time period where I've added a ton of muscle. In fact, the most muscle I added, I would say, is likely early in med school, and when I went from being extremely skinny to just kind of like a normal athlete build, that's when I actually added the most pounds with my newbie gains.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. And I know you posted a while back, we can maybe link to this or put it on there, of your sort of progression from like skinny kid to putting on the mass to, mm-hmm. You know, taking HCG and like reasonable doses of TRT. And I think the TRT is more cosmetic than actual lean tissue. I don't know if you would agree with that, but that's kind of my assessment when people go through like from like having low testosterone and still being able to build muscle mm-hmm. to having some of those more cosmetic changes with mm-hmm. testosterone.
Yeah. From age 20 to my early 30s, I built about 50 pounds of like I gained about 50 pounds, mostly lean. And then the last 5 to 10 pounds I have built with that. But I would say a lot of it's just the opportunity cost. So in other podcasts, I've talked about how my testosterone's dropping significantly. My sleep is worse. My varicocele is worse. My testosterone was just much lower. And I knew that it was not going to get better. My health outcomes were going to get worse. My body composition was going to get worse. And my workouts were just much worse. So I feel like keeping things consistent and progressing, it just gave me the tool in order to do so. I see so many people in my same age category, mid to upper 30s. They have 3 kids. They have businesses they're trying to run. And it is so common to see them neglect their physical health and their body composition. And it's really hard to get that time back.
Yeah. And you're optimizing recovery. Like, I think that's the most predictable benefit of testosterone is you recover faster from exercise.
Yep.
You know, despite what my health textbooks might have said in high school, that some athletes try to use steroids or growth hormone to cheat, but it doesn't actually help.
Correct.
We know it does help quite a bit, but not everybody gets the same like hyper response to testosterone or growth hormone or whatever sort of mm-hmm. means they're using there. And then how about the body fat percentage? And this is a common question people ask me is, you know, what body fat percent am I or what body fat percent do I need to be to, you know, see my abs? And a lot of it depends on how you store your body fat.
Definitely.
People ask, can you spot reduce body fat? That might be something interesting to talk about. Mm-hmm. But you came in at just under 13%, so 12.8% body fat. The visceral fat was 0.2 pounds, so a very healthy body mm-hmm. composition.
Yeah. What's super interesting about this is the fat that I've lost in the last year and a half, 2 years or so is almost exclusively from my legs. And I have been running way more the last 2 years compared to the last 5 years. So I know spot body fat reduction is, you know, supposedly not possible, but I think it's awfully suspicious that I've lost a lot of fat around my legs that are constantly burning, you know, aerobic, oxidative, basically fat-burning exercise for very long periods of time.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of studies out there that show maybe a shred of evidence that, okay, if you're, like, let's say you are doing a ton of crunches or leg raises or something
Skeeterg.
Like that, that you might burn a little bit more, but it's not, from my recollection, it's not enough to where it would make a large cosmetic difference.
Yeah.
But, I mean, did you perceive a large difference in how lean your legs are from, like, 2 years ago to now?
Not really, but mainly because pants still fit about the same. There was definitely a time period where I was squatting and deadlifting a lot more, and pants were fitting a lot tighter, and now it's much more normal. So maybe some of that it's just fat loss.
Traded some muscle for some
fat. Legs. Yeah. I also think it's interesting that, you know, there's a lot of genetic predisposition. We do have a full podcast planned with my wife, Maddie, and about lipedema, because she's extremely predisposed to lipedema. And basically, she stays very lean all the time, and that helps her not get lipedema, which is basically the same thing. And this is an oversimplification, but it's similar to a beer belly, where guys who have a beer belly or android body fat deposition, it's very hard to lose all of that 100% without surgery. And the kind of the same thing is true with lipedema or gynoid body fat or gynecoid body fat distribution. But she's always leaner in her torso than I am. And that's because, you know, females tend to be that way. They tend to carry their fat differently. And her visceral adipose is always better than mine is as well. So, you know, I would love to have a leaner midsection than 11% or 12%, whatever it came back as. But there's at some point downsides to getting leaner and leaner when it comes to performance.
Yeah, and injury risk is something I think of there. I guess we can run through Maddie's results here quickly and post those on the screen so people can compare their DEXA scans and yep. see if they're going to beat her. Body fat percentage, 17.6%, which is quite lean. This is leaner than a lot of like professional mm-hmm. female athletes even. So yep.
I think her leanest was 16%. Yeah, it is pretty lean. You know, she's a higher body weight, I think 193 total pounds mm-hmm. in this scan at least. Sometimes she's even a bit heavier than that. But that was quite good.
152 pounds of lean mass.
Mm-hmm. 7.1 bone mass and 2.9 T-score. She has had a higher T-score than that before as well. But
yeah, there's a little bit of variation from scan to scan. I mean, maybe you have a 1% or 2% mm-hmm. error margin. And the visceral fat, about half of yourself. So
0.09 pounds. Yeah, it's a really good visceral fat score. I know Cameron, our media guy, has had a perfect 0.00 visceral fat score before. So shout out to him.
It wasn't his total mass the same as Maddie's lean mass in that scan?
No. Actually, his mass scores are probably pretty similar to Maddie's. He was just much leaner, which, of course, as you expect, because females have a lot higher essential body fat. 17% on a DEXA is extremely lean for a female. I think when Maddie does bioimpedance tests like the InBody, at this leanness, she would be around 10%.
Yeah, the bioimpedance.
Pretty frequent to see much lower body fat percentages.
Yeah, most people, it kind of underestimates their body fat. But mm-hmm. directionally, it can be a good tool, and it's non-invasive, mm-hmm. no radiation. A lot of gyms have this for free.
Yep.
So it's something people can use to kind of stay motivated, perhaps, as a tool.
But you definitely can't compare. Yep. I know that some people, Cameron for sure, Derek is – you know, you can't compare a 4% body fat reading on an InBody to a 10% body fat reading on a DEXA. It doesn't mean you're leaner. It's just a different scan.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm due for about two and a half months now. I'll get a DEXA scan. I didn't get one right after my pec tear. It wasn't the first thing on my mind, but that's when my interval was due. It would have been interesting to see sort of maybe 8 weeks post-operatively, how much my right side had shrunken down and then how much it would sort of rebound a year later.
Yeah.
But I just didn't do it because I was thinking about other things and rehab and work at the time. So
that will be interesting.
We'll see what that looks like if I've added some more bone density, added some more lean body mass. I know my body composition is kind of strange where I could be, I think I was nearly 16% body fat, but still had like visible six pack. So like for some people, what body fat they have to see abs can be significantly different. Some people may have to be below 10%. Some people can store all of their fat in their back like a camel. That's kind of how I think of myself, where
you almost always have abs. Yeah. You'd be a great fitness influencer.
I would actually
just say it's the peptides.
That would be the most lucrative like career for me if I just, you know, stayed at, you know, 6 or 7% body fat, you know, never took a selfie without a pump, and then just sold ab workout programs and peptides with a discount code. Like, that would be the least input and highest financial output, but I wouldn't find that rewarding at all.
Yeah, just sell people retatrutide.
Yeah.
It's so much better than tirzepatide.
Use code James10 for 10% off your Retta.
Yeah. Anyways, sorry for the rabbit trail for those listening, but hopefully they enjoyed that. Before we wrap up, I would say that even if you have not beaten us on our five different DEXA scan categories, yes, we we are just like literally born big boned. So it's not totally fair, but we're the ones offering the $1,000 gift card prize.
Yeah, maybe if you want to offer
your $1,000 gift card prize, you can choose different
categories. Maybe next time we'll do a normalized fat-free mass index to level the playing field a little bit.
I think mine is 24.
Yeah, it's pretty solid.
Yeah, Maddie's is extremely high for a female. Yeah. I don't remember what it was. Yeah.
But in any case, even if you are able to beat them in two categories, go ahead and go to sagebio.com. Make an account and then message us on the Sage Bio Instagram.
Yep.
And we will give you a code or manually apply a free 1-year membership to your Sage Bio account. So you can track all of your labs there, try out the visualizer, talk to Noctur AI about your health. It's a really cool tool and we've gotten good feedback. People seem to like it. And if you have feedback, we'd love to hear that too. So let us know. If you haven't got a DEXA, you know, get one to kind of see where you're at, get your baseline and how you can improve on it. And as always, thank you for listening and may God bless you with health and happiness.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.